listening to No Holds Barred News on the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network, the undefeated No Holds Barred news source of the world. Now, from Vancouver, British Columbia, here is your host, Kelsey Mowat.
Okay, here we are, the debut show of NHB News on Full Contact Fighter Radio Network, and Brendan Lear joins us now from sunny Edmonton, Alberta. Brendan, how are you doing today, man?
I'm very well, Kelsey, very well, thank you.
Fantastic. My name, of course, is Kelsey Mowat. I write for Full Contact Fighter and do some Canadian correspondence as well as some international coverage for them. And this show, ideally, we'd like to cover all aspects of MMA. And, you know, us being two Canadians, we'll definitely do our share of Canadian coverage, but we'll try our best to cover all aspects of mixed martial arts. Sports getting crazy busy now, man. I mean, we had the Ultimate Fighter finale last night. We're going to be talking to Dennis Kang later in the show. We wanted to have him on a couple weeks ago to talk about his big win over Ninja Hua at Bushido. But we've also got Ultimate Fight Night coming up. We've got Pride, Absolute Grand Prix coming up on Sunday. It's UFC, Ken Shamrock, Tito, Part 2, Arlovski, Sylvia. It's crazy, man. It's a busy time coming up.
It's been a strange couple of weeks because my wife has failed to be impatient with me, which usually means there's no fighting on in my basement. It's filled with beer-swilling, beer-bellied sharecropper MMA fans.
So, right.
We've had a little bit of lull, but the storm, again, is coming with three UFC programs in a row and Pride, the much-anticipated second round of the Pride Openweight Championship with Wanderlei Silva's debut, so it should be very, very interesting and some excellent fighting as well.
Yeah, for sure. And with Wanderlei going to be in the next round, he's going to be fighting Fujia. That's going to be a really interesting matchup for sure. You know, whether or not he can weather the storm, I would suspect that Fujia will try his darndest to take Silva down. Wouldn't you think?
I think. I anticipate perhaps a broken hand on Wanderlei's part. I don't think he's ever had problems in that way before, but Fujita's proven himself to be incredibly resilient and incredibly hard-headed. So I can't see him being easily knocked out or manhandled by Wanderlei. I think he'll have his hands full.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's a good point. You know, the fact that Fujita, he's just got a barrel for a head and a one of the biggest necks you'll ever see on a dude. I mean, this guy's going to have some trouble. Vandy's going to have some trouble trying to knock him out for sure, you know.
No, I don't think he's going to be bent over in the tie clinch much unless he's hurt already, and he's proven to be fairly resilient. So we'll see. We'll see if he has to go to the back in the Fedor fashion.
Yeah. And, you know, and there definitely, like, with everything picking up, and it's going to be really busy, you know, we want to talk about Ultimate Fight Night, which is coming up on Wednesday as well, and there's some interesting matchups in that show. Chris Leben against Anderson Silva, which I think is going to be a great show, and it's kind of a good tie in there, because you've got another guy in Leben who can take a nasty shot and won't go down, very similar to Fujia.
Yeah, I think this will be Leben's big test in terms of fans more savvy on the international scene. I think he's got established himself, and rightfully, quite a good reputation in the States, but it's by bringing in a sort of world-class middleweight like Silva that will either establish Leben's reputation or sort of place him where he ought to be. But I'm aboard the Leben bandwagon to some extent. I didn't think he had the mental game coming out of the show, but he's proven himself to be able to stand in there and take a shot and give one out. So it'll be an interesting fight and a great looking fight, I'm sure as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And from what I hear, and from hearing reading interviews with Chris, it sounds like, you know, he's not necessarily saying he's just going to take it to the ground for sure, but you kind of get the sense that he's definitely willing to lean that way. And I think, honestly, if you look at a guy like Anderson Silva, who's, you know, got some nasty, nasty strikes, that definitely would be a good game plan for Chris to take it to the ground, because he's shown great wrestling capabilities and great ground-and-pound skills in the past.
Well, of course, the last time we saw Silva was in the Rumble in the Rock tournament, where he was actually eliminated, but eliminated by throwing one of the most awesome kicks ever seen from within from within the guard. It was a phenomenal kick that knocked out his opponent, although it was illegal according to the rules.
Yeah,
it was just an unbelievable display of skill.
Yeah, and you know, I think for sure that, like you mentioned, international fans are well familiar, and not even just international fans, but the hardcore mixed martial arts fans are for sure know Anderson. They know his Pride fights, and they know his Cage, his Cage Rage fights in the States. So it definitely will be it'll be an interesting matchup for sure. And then you've also got Stephen Bonner taking on Rashad Evans in a light heavyweight fight that same night, and there's some good Canadian matchups too. You've got Mark Hominick taking on George Gergel, and that's going to be a great fight too. And Mark Hominick's coming off a recent loss, so you know, for the Canadian fans, I'm sure they'll be cheering for Mark, and he's going to be taking on an extremely talented fighter in Gergel.
Yep, I think it'll be very interesting. This is the first time we will see him in all his glory. And Gergel, although he came up on the show, was always very well known as one of the best BJJ practitioners working in the States, and his reputation was built in the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu community preceded him by years and years and years. You know, he was awarded many black belts and was Rich Franklin's Jiu-Jitsu coach as well. So it's kind of his own. Time to come into his own, I think, and he was one of those fighters that that wasn't really the sort of novice you see coming up in the Ultimate Fighter. So we'll see if he establishes himself and claims his reputation on television. It'll be very interesting to see.
Yeah, and then you've also got Jonathan Goulet. He's going to be fighting Luke Como, who, you know, of course, everyone probably remembers or watched the Ultimate Fighter last season. And that should be a great fight, too. You got two guys that have great stand-up and should be a good fight. And Goulet needs a win after that devastating KO loss to Dwayne Ludwig his last time in.
I think this will be hopefully Como's coming out party as well, because he's such an entertaining fighter to watch. And not necessarily because he's physically imposing, but you know, he showed a great flair and panache in terms of his personality and his gut and his heart in the last two fights we've seen him in, and I think he's one of these characters who's an underdog that a lot of people will get behind. You know, seems to be the perpetual underdog that that people just love to get behind, and it'll be interesting to see him again. We haven't seen him fight for a long time, so it'll be interesting to see him again come out.
Now, who are you
coming out party, Kelsey?
Yeah, exactly. It's that seems to be the theme. Now, who are you picking, man? Who are you picking between Stephen Bonner and Rashad Evans?
I don't know. You know, I think Stephen Bonner has demonstrated, even though the Keith Jardine fight was very close, and a lot of people believe he lost that fight, he did enough to win, and he's shown a great resiliency, you know, and a great propensity to hang in there and be in at the end of the fight, even if he doesn't dominate in the way that I think some people have expected him to. You know, he's shown that he's got good game and a great head and a great heart, and we'll see. I have to pick Bonner because Evans, I don't think has shown us really anything. There was a great expectation when he came down to 205 that he would really take off, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure he's got anything on Bonner. He's got nothing that Bonner hasn't seen before. So,
yeah, I'm agreeing with you too. I don't see Rashad necessarily having the tools to put away Stefan. Stefan against Keith Jardine, yeah, that was a great fight, and Jardine is a tough, tough man, and he showed that again last night. He can take a shot and keep coming. And, you know, I thought Stefan looked really impressive against James Irvin. You know, he took Irvin out of his element and submitted him and showed some good jiu-jitsu. And I think that's where Rashad is going to have some problems, Rashad's got decent stand-up. Stefan's got good stand-up. I don't see either one of those guys necessarily dominating there. And Rashad's a great wrestler, but I don't see him when he's been taking guys down. He doesn't really seem to advance the position too much. Doesn't really seem to threaten to end the fight from the ground. And you know, in his last fight, or I can't remember if it was his last fight, but the fight against Hoger, you know, he showed not too much in finishing skills on the ground. And I mean, hey, if Rashad's listening, he can definitely prove us both wrong. But
that's for sure.
I think Stefan probably has got the edge on the ground as far as submissions, and from what I've seen, I think he probably has the edge standing as well. So I'm agreeing with you, man. I'm going to go with Bonner too.
Yeah, you know, I think Evans has been in a couple of fights that have gone to a decision, and you realize that, you know, maybe there wasn't much potential to finish the fight, and then there's those fights like Jardine's, you know, like Jardine's last night that were just phenomenal. You love to see fights like that. Well, you hate to see any fight go to a decision, but if you have to see a fight go to a decision, you want to see a fight like that. That was a real unbelievable war. I thought that was phenomenal.
Yeah, and last night there were some great fights. You know, a couple long battles, and especially the Herman Kendall Groves fight. That was unbelievable. You know, that Dana White and the UFC have just been blessed with having some fantastic finale fights. I mean, that was another great fight to go in the Ultimate Fighter highlight vaults.
Exactly. I'm not sure. I'm not sure exactly how they do that, and I'm actually getting annoyed. You know, because every time I pay my $40 to watch a UFC card, you know, you know, half the undercard fights are well, by far more disappointing than you know, our free television fights. So I'm not sure exactly if the tail's not wagging the dog on these. Maybe I'll have to start out of luck, just not buying the pay per view, and maybe the fights will get better.
Yeah, perhaps. Maybe that's the secret trick out there. Maybe it's a subconscious thing. These guys know that there's, you know, probably far more people watching, even though they get good pay-per-view buys for the UFC and been, you know, increasing over the last couple of years. There's no doubt that when they're fighting on Spike, you know, the viewership is way higher. And, you know, I don't know if that's it or if it's just the fact that you've got two guys going for what is a huge contract. That's a lot of money for these guys at this stage in their career. And, you know, as you saw last night, guys aren't going to tap. They're not going to submit. They're going to keep going. They're going to make the ref stop it because they've got a lot to lose.
Yeah, I think there were some, we saw a lot of that, and a lot of incredible submission defense, especially in the Groves fight. It was just phenomenal. You know, I thought both Herman and Groves had really strong submissions that looked like they were going to finish their opponent, especially those two triangles that Groves had on. I thought Herman was definitely done.
Yeah.
You know, the second one, especially, Groves had his leg hooked, and he wasn't going to get slammed. And unbelievably, Herman got out of both. And I guess, you know, Herman, to look at him fight and to see him fight, you see a lot of, I think, Lindland more than Couture in him. Their styles are very, very similar, and he's almost, you know, you get the sense once he was on top of Grove, you know, he's kind of like an anaconda, and that every movement that Grove make would just work against him. So it was very impressive to me, especially that Grove got out of a lot of that, got out of a lot of those difficult situations and fought for some decent-looking submissions on the ground.
Yeah, it was a thriller, and you know what, I'm stoked about today's show. We have got Kenny Florian, and we haven't even really got into that yet, but we will here in moments. We'll be talking to Kenny Florian about his big win over Sam Stout last night. So, you know, to take the guy who won the fight in the main event of last night's show on our first show is definitely huge. And then on the back end of the show, we're going to have Dennis Kang talking to us about his recent win in Pride. So everyone stay out there, stay tuned. You're listening to NHB News on Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hello, welcome to the party.
Hi, I've never met you before.
I know.
Just two guys and we're having a good time. Having a good time. Having a good time. Just two guys and we're having a good time. Having a good time.
Having a good time.
We'll burn the roof off. This party's going off. You think that we're soft? You get tossed.
Guy number one, I love to dance. Fancy feet moves, putting you in a trance.
It's a friend thing. Friends are everywhere. In the kitchen, the den, hanging out on the stairs. Spinach dip.
Have you subscribed to Full Contact Fighter? FCF is the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world, and no avid MMA fan should ever miss an issue. For years now, FCF has been providing MMA enthusiasts in-depth coverage of the world's greatest sport. Each issue contains event reports and photos from across the globe, including coverage from Japan, Brazil, Britain, Canada, and the United States. From fighter bios, technical advice, to training tips, FCF is the only publication that brings you all the MMA coverage you need every month, 12 times a year. Check out www.fcfighter.com for subscription information or call 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world. All right, so here we are, the first edition of No-Holds-Barred News on Full Contact Fighter Radio Network, and we're extremely happy to have Kenny Florian joining us now from Vegas. Kenny, how are you doing today, man?
I'm doing great.
Now, you're still...
Great to be on the show.
Yeah, it's an honor to have you on, especially after the big win last night. You're still in Vegas. You hanging out there until Wednesday? To watch the fights.
I'm going to be cornering my buddy Stefan Bonner. He's fighting Rashad Evans on the 28th, so I'm sticking around to support him and help him any way I can.
Are you training with Bonner now?
I have been. He comes down to Boston quite often to train with us over at City Hot Tong in Boston, Muay Thai and MMA Academy down there. And, he's been training real hard in the Muay Thai recently, and he's been looking sharp, so he's like one of us now. So he's a good friend, and we train a lot. So definitely want to see him do well.
Speaking of looking sharp, your victory last night was sort of almost a textbook victory. Quick takedown off an aggressive stout, and finishing with the rear naked that has been often well defended in recent MMA fights. Can you tell us a bit about that technique and how you could sink it in when it seems to be not the 100% victory it used to appear to have been?
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. I've been working hard on my all round game. I actually told myself I wasn't going to force the ground game. I really wanted to stand up with him, but at the same time, I didn't want to force anything, and here I was. I didn't have to force the stand-up this time. He just came straight up. He was upright, and just the logical decision. My body just went into a kind of automatic pilot and just changed levels, went with a body clinch and just took him down. So once he was on the ground, I was very comfortable there. Been working a lot on my ground and pound, and just the pressure I put on him, I think, opened him up to the mount, and from there he turned his back. There's a special technique, some adjustments that I've made, my brother and I, to change the rear naked choke to a much more powerful weapon. I think it's a lot of people know how to apply it, or think they know how to apply it, but there's a lot of details that I think a lot of fighters miss. Not to say that, I'm better or whatever, but that's just something I've been breaking down myself to make it an efficient move. And, since the first time I saw UFC 1, I've always thought that the rear naked choke is probably the single most efficient and effective move in all of mixed martial arts. And when it's applied correctly, like Mr. Miyagi said, no can defend.
Mr. Miyagi. Now, you mentioned the adaptations and watching guys and not applying it correctly. Can you maybe point out to us, the listening audience here, like what more specifically you're referring to? What have you been seeing guys maybe do wrong lately?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Just, you mentioned that you make some adaptations to how you apply the rear naked choke, and that
right.
You see some guys maybe not applying it correctly. In what kind of sense are they not applying it correctly?
Yeah, a lot of guys, that they try to kind of wrench their arms up into the neck, where, the most important thing is really sliding your hand inside the neck, close to the chin, almost to the back of the neck, behind the ear,
right.
Sliding it in, and really thrusting your own head forward, which prevents a lot of your opponent's defense. You're taking away that defense that he can do. So that's very important. Also taking away his hands. A lot of times it's very important. Everyone knows, well, trying to secure the rear naked choke, you're supposed to reach behind and take away the person who's, the person's arm that's trying to secure it behind his head. and I always slide it behind the neck instead of coming up and over in front of the face. That way it's very difficult for them to get a grip on that hand that's securing the choke. I don't know if that made any sense at all, but
no,
I think it's one of those things you kind of have to demonstrate and explain, but hopefully some people got the idea there on that one. I think it's just applied incorrectly. A lot of guys just try to force it through where
right.
It really needs to be applied very sharply kind of along the jawline. So it's almost become a bit of a hot topic because it's almost, giving up your back. In the if you recall the Loiseau-Tanner fight, it was almost as if Loiseau was giving up his back in order to at some point get a sweep and get into guard. So he was seemed completely
right.
Unconcerned. And I also noticed it in the Loiseau-Franklin fight, and Franklin almost refused to take Loiseau's back. He worked from the side when Loiseau would turn over. So
good point.
Good point. Maybe my arms are just real skinny, so I'm able to slide it in there. I think everyone's got arms. Their arms are too big; they can't get the choke in. So that was an advantage of mine, having girl-like arms. Thank God for those of us with skinny arms.
Yes,
that's great.
Well, were you surprised at Stout's aggressiveness from the get-go? I mean, obviously he wanted to stand, but were you expecting him to kind of take more of a counter-punching stance and wait for you to come in? It seemed like he kind of rushed at you, and maybe I'm wrong, yeah. But maybe you got the takedown easier.
The kid's a brawler, every fight I've seen him in, he turns it into a war sometimes, anytime he can on the feet. So I wasn't too surprised with his aggressiveness. I was surprised how straight he came at me.
Right.
Not really a good thing to do against someone who may try to take you down. He went straight at me, and I've seen him do that in other fights, and I was surprised at how much trouble people would have taking him down. He did the exact same thing against me. He just went straight at me, which is not a good thing for someone who may take you down, and he went straight up. He was upright. He wasn't low. He didn't change his level. He wasn't getting off at an angle. So it was the easy decision for me. My body just went on automatic pilot and took him down. So it was to his disadvantage for coming out as aggressive as he did. It was a bad choice, I think.
Yeah.
So my question is to you: is how excited are you that the 155s are back, and how do you see your place in the UFC differently than when you had to come aboard at 185 for the reality show?
Right. I'm extremely excited. The 155 pound division, it's exciting. Now they just signed Jens Pulver. Sean Sherk looks like he's coming down to 155. Eve Edwards is in the mix. Hominick, Gurgel. There's a ton of great fighters right now in the division. That excites me. That's what motivates me. I know that every fight from here on out is going to be tough, and that's what I want. I'm not here to build up a record. I've fought tough fights from my very first mixed martial arts fight. I was with only three or four fights on my record. I was thrown into the Ultimate Fighter in the two weight classes above my own weight. And a lot of people would have said that was stupid. And I took a big risk in looking bad. But I do this for me. I do it to be a better fighter. I don't do it to look good and build up my ego. I want to be the best fighter that I can be. And I know that experience, whether bad or good, has made me a better fighter today, and that's all I'm looking to do. I want to fight the best, and I want to be the best. So that's what I'm looking to do: fight the other top 155 pounders. I think Stout was one of those guys. Obviously, beating Spencer Fisher.
Mm-hmm.
While Fisher may have taken the fight on short notice, beating Spencer Fisher is not an easy task to do, and I think he proved himself to be one of the top guys. And I'm glad that I got a chance to fight a quality opponent like Sam Stout.
Now, when I've heard speculation, and when I talked to, I did a story on Spencer Fisher for last month's issue, or the upcoming issue, rather, of Full Contact Fighter, and Spencer had speculated that he had heard that the winner of the fight last night between yourself and Sam would fight Sean Sherk for the lightweight championship. Is there anything you can tell us on that, or are you just in the dark like we all are?
I haven't heard, I've heard the very same rumors. To this day, I haven't really heard officially from a UFC official telling me that, you will fight for the title in your next fight. I have not heard that. I have heard from UFC officials that they've said that this is for, you know, a number one contender spot or a top contender spot, but whether that necessarily means that I'll fight for a title or not, I don't know, you know. You know, to be honest, the only thing I was concerned with was Sam Stout, and, you know, now, you know, I can talk about anything about what's going to happen after, but quite honestly, I haven't really heard anything past this point, and whether that happens or not, I don't know. I mean, I'm excited to fight another tough 155er, and if it's Shirk or whoever, I'll be ready, and I'll be definitely training my ass off for it.
Now, I mean, like, when you look at we talked already about the guys that are in the 155-pound division, and obviously there's, you know, the UFC's put together a ton of talent in a fairly short span. How do you look at yourself matching up? I know last night in the pre-fight interviews, you talked about how Sam Stout was saying he was going to brawl and sprawl, and that you're kind of used to that line now. You've taken care of Kit Cope, Alex Karalexis, Sam Stout, with guys that feature the stand-up aspect of their game. Looking around at the Spencer Fishers, the Jens Pulver, Sean Shirk, I mean, maybe those three guys in particular, and George Gergel, Mark Hominick, how do you see yourself matching up against those guys? Are you kind of feeling the urge to want to display a little bit more of your stand-up skills that you were referring to?
Absolutely. I mean, I was disappointed with the fight almost yesterday. I wanted to show more of what I have. I almost wanted a longer fight to kind of show my versatility. You know, I'll get my chance, you know. I think all of those fights, with probably the exception of Shirk, would be fights that I'm super excited about. I mean, I would love to fight Shirk, but with no disrespect to Shirk, he's an amazing fighter, obviously a guy that's very hard to beat, but I don't see him as an incredibly exciting fighter. Mm-hmm. He's a guy who's going to get he's going to go for the win, and by that I mean he'll take you down and kind of hold you down and kind of grind out wins that way. More than, say, you know, an Eve Edwards, a Hominick, a Gergel. They really go for it and make it exciting fights. As is, you know, Jens Pulver, Spencer Fisher. So those are fights that I would rather have, because those guys are really going to go for it and put it all on the line. Not that Shirk doesn't, but I think it makes for a more exciting matchup. You know what I mean? Shirk is a tough guy to fight, you know?
That seems to be an interesting debate now, and a lot of fighters are very critical and come out as being critical of these guys. And, you know, and I guess the prototypes are the Matt Littlins of the world, who are quote unquote not exciting fighters, and even can make very exciting fighters look very not exciting by holding them down and pounding them out. So what do you think about that as a fighter coming up? Do you have an obligation to win, or do you have an obligation to put on a good fight, and how do you strike a balance in your own mind?
Yeah. It's tough. For me, you know, I've always gone with the attitude of I have to finish the fight. I have to, you know, and not even necessarily for the fans, but just for myself, my goal has always been to prove them the better fighter, and the only way to really do that is by knocking out your opponent or submitting them or TKOing, whatever that may be, and, you know, one way or another, I always try to finish the fight, and I think that's what all fighters should be striving for, especially if we want to build the sport up. I don't think anybody wants to see any guys, you know, anyone circling for 15 minutes or, you know, hugging each other on the ground for 15 minutes. You know, that's a great way to turn fans away or, you know, lose potential new fans. I think this sport is going to thrive on exciting fighters. It's simple as that. I mean, you look at boxing recently. What's scary is you look at the popularity of boxing in the 80s and 90s, and now you try to find, you know, name 10 boxers that you would really pay to go see.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think I could do that. You know,
that's the sport where you only punch, right?
That's right. That's right. And you know, not having that talent or those exciting fighters to propel the sport, the sport's dead. The sport will die, and the sport can die with you know, I won't mention any names, but you have guys who are just going to be boring fighters. It will kill the sport. So I think it's imperative that we have exciting fighters in the sport, trying to finish, trying to knock out, trying to submit, whatever, to get new fans.
And yep. Do you think you can do that via just simply rule changes? I know Pride has an emphasis on attempting to finish the fight, you know, in their official scoring. Can you do that through
rule changes, or do you have to do it by, you know, choosing to sign certain fighters and not choosing to sign others? Is there a way you can strike that balance without seeming to look like you're just simply wanting to put on a good show?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I think you're right that there should be some emphasis in the rules to finish the fight. An interesting fight actually last night was Kendall's fight against Ed Herman.
Yeah.
It almost seemed like there was a switch for that fight. Kendall, under UFC rules, it seemed, you know, consistently it seemed like from past bouts that Kendall was going to lose that fight according to the way UFC normally judges fights.
Yeah.
But he did have the closer finishes, and he actually got the unanimous decision, which was a surprise in my book. And, you know, it's up to really the judges being more educated on the fight. And really, I think it starts probably with the promoters putting together the right fights and the right fighters together to really make it an exciting show. You know, after all, these are paying people, either pay-per-view or people actually going there live to see the fights. And they're the reason we're fighting, you know. They're paying to see us fight. And I think it probably starts with the promoters first.
Kelsey, what did your gut say after that fight?
Follow the rules.
What's that, Brennan?
Sorry, but what did your gut say after that fight?
I certainly thought
Kendall was not going to get the decision.
No, I thought Herman was going to get the decision, and just like Kenny said.
Yeah, I thought Herman won the fight as well. I love Kendall. He's a great kid. But I thought Herman won the fight. He had some, you know, more than takedowns and some good ground and pound there. I thought definitely Herman won. But it just goes to show you, it's so important to finish the fight. You know, anything can happen.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned last night in your post-fight interview with Rogan that you felt like at 155 you're actually going to come into these fights on the bigger end of the lightweight division. And then you look at some of these guys like Sean Sherk, who you would most definitely put in that category. I mean, the guy's muscle ripped at 170. But then on the flip side, you look at guys like Jens Pulver and Mark Hominick, who are usually fight at 145. With Jens coming back to the UFC, I guess it's a two-part question. One, were you surprised at that signing? And B, do you see him being able to compete like he did before being the champion?
Yeah, you know, with regards to Jens, I think he's obviously, he's shown still to have that type of capability. His fights, last fights in Pride,
mm-hmm.
He's still a very dangerous fighter. I think he's a better fighter in many ways, and I think the 3 5-minute rounds or 5 5-minute rounds, whatever it is, favors Jens and his style even more than that first 10-minute round that Pride has. It's exciting. It's exciting having him in the division. I think he's only going to add to the quality of the weight class. And Sean Sherk, you know, I don't know how he's going to get down to 155. He's going to have to lose a lot of muscle, that's for sure. Because you know, you look at him. Let's just assume he's at the lightest. He walks around at 175. He's got to be at probably 5% body fat. So
he looks shredded at 170.
Yeah,
shredded, absolutely shredded, and big. And he's a short guy, but he's all muscle, you know. So he's going to definitely have to lose some of that muscle, and it'll be interesting to see how we transition.
Yeah,
my final question for you, Kenny, is the history of MMA. Although it seems to, you know, we always talk about the history and the quote unquote legends. That history has been condensed into a matter of a decade or a little bit more. So what's it like? You know, what's it like thinking of having to compete against people who have been your heroes or people who you saw when you were a teenager first watching mixed martial arts, like Jens Pulver or Eve Edwards? What's it like fighting people who are the quote-unquote legends? You know, is that like saying fighting Muhammad Ali or something like that? Is that daunting to you?
Yeah, I mean, definitely not to the level of Muhammad Ali. You know, I definitely can't say that. He's a one of a kind. But certainly it's the guys that, you know, we grew up watching, you know. The sport is still young, so fighting a guy like Jens, you know, he's one of the guys that I think we looked up to. So I think I'm probably over that whole, you know, UFC star thing. At this point, I think I woke up after the Ultimate Fighter finale. You know, I was kind of went from fan to fighter, as I've been quoted before, and now I realize that, you know, I'm a fighter, not a fan. I'm here to fight and beat people up, hopefully. And you know, I'd love to fight a guy like Jens. You know, as much as I respect him and think he is a legend, I would love to fight him, and I think I would give him a great fight.
That's a really great comment. Do you notice fighters? You say I'm a fighter. Not, I'm a fighter now, not a fan. Do you notice fighters who are still fans? Do you think that's a problem?
Some of them. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm a fan in the sense that I love the sport. But I was a kid who kind of was just happy to be here. You know, being on the Ultimate Fighter season one and all that stuff. And I was kind of just surprised by the whole thing. Instead of saying, you know, I'm really here. I'm here to fight in UFC. I'm here to beat everyone on my path. And it was a big wake up call for me. You know, it caused me to be a deer stuck in the headlights there in the finale. And it just made me so much more focused as a fighter. The way I train, the way I prepare now, mentally, physically, everything. So.
Kenny, last question for you, and I mean, I know part of the answer to this. Obviously, you mentioned earlier you're cornering Stefan in his upcoming fight against Rashad Evans. Who are you picking in that fight, and give us the reasons why you think Stefan's going to win that fight?
Between Rashad and Stefan?
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely think Rashad's a tough guy. He's another one of those guys, similar to Shirk. He's tough to beat. I think he's got probably Stefan on the wrestling, but for sure Stefan has the better striking and the better submission skills. So I'm going to have to go with Stefan. I think Stefan's going to be very aggressive in this fight. And I think I pick Stefan by submission in probably the second round.
All right, fair enough. I knew you were going to go with the guy you've been training with, obviously, but it's nice to hear the specifics of that prediction. Mr. Florian, thank you very much for taking time out, and again, we really appreciate it on
thank
our
you very
debut
much.
Show. So,
my pleasure, guys. Always great to be a part of a new mixed martial arts venture, so best of luck to you guys, and you know, at any time I'm available, I'd be happy to be on the show.
Okay, take
thank
care.
Thank you very much.
By now, you've probably seen dozens of your favorite MMA fighters wearing full contact fighter clothing. But hey, listen, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With the FCF shop, we have all that you require for your fightwear needs. From NHB corduroy hats, tricot jackets to camo board shorts, or the NHB Extreme Fight shorts, our famous hoodies, to the classic full contact fighter t-shirts, all your MMA clothing can be found at www.fcfighter.com. Pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or you can also reach FCF to place an order by calling 516-676-0033. Also now open is a Full Contact Fighter sticker and banner shop, plus a full assortment of all your favorite official IFL team clothing is now available at fcfighter.com, or call us, again that number is 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world. Joining us now live from Coconut Creek, or I am assuming Dennis is in Coconut Creek right now, Dennis Kang. Dennis, how are you doing today, man?
I'm good. Good. Happy to be here.
Great. Thanks for joining us. First debut show of NHB News on Full Contact Fighter Radio. It's got to be a huge honor for you, right, buddy?
Great. It's actually the first, thing of this sort that I've done. You know, I've done lots of interviews, never any, radio or podcast like this.
Oh, really? Well, you never know. This could be our first and only show.
Well, then it'll be even more of an honor.
Yeah.
We're just talking, Kelsey and I were just talking earlier about our lack of radio persona, not being media people, but being polite and subdued Canadians. And now we're talking to a third polite and subdued Canadian, so it could be more like a Pierre Burton interview of old.
Yeah, it's true. You know, we have to jack it up for the rest of our audience here with some attitude and maybe smack talk Dennis a little bit and getting all fired
up. Talk.
Yeah. Well, I mean, first off, congrats on the big win over Ninja Rua. We wanted to talk to you a couple weeks ago, and you were gracious enough to agree to that. And then, unfortunately, we had some difficulties getting the show off the ground on our end. But in the pre-fight interviews, Dennis, you talked about the fact that you thought that you saw an opening in Ninja's striking game. And let's face it, some fighters sometimes will make comments like that to try to get in someone's head, and they don't really plan on carrying through with that game plan. But obviously, in your case, you meant what you said.
Oh, yeah. I mean, first of all, I always do my homework on my opponent, you know, unless there's absolutely no material available. But I think at this level, there's always an abundant source of material, you know, on the fighters, on their past fights. So I could do my homework on Ninja, and I did see, you know, like I said, that he came straight open with his chin up in the air when he came forward with punches. And, you know, I've had enough fights now that I'm disciplined enough to actually carry out the game plan in at least the first few minutes. Every great fighter will tell you, you know, the game plan usually goes out the window after a few minutes. Even generals in the Army will tell you the same thing.
Yeah.
You talked a little bit in interviews over your last couple fights about sort of disciplining yourself and about not getting carried away and straying away from your game plan.
Yep.
Do you find that that's a sort of second phase of using your skill as a fighter, is being able to step back and sort of observe the fight instead of just, you know, going forward and going balls out?
Yeah, I mean, it's really important. You know, it's half of it right there. You really got to go out there with a plan A and a plan B. But, I mean, again, at the same time, you never know what can happen. It can be completely, you could be down to plan X, you know, by the time you're set in the rhythm. I mean, there's just so many variables in this sport, and, you know, the opponent can have a game plan of his own, and it can be completely different than what you're expecting. So you just got to go out there, be ready, and be ready to improvise, and that's when the long, hard sparring is going to come in handy, because you should be ready for whatever he throws at you, because you'll have gone through it in the weeks of preparation for the fight.
Now, Dennis, you know, I've interviewed you a few times in the last year, and we've talked about the dedication you've spent on your stand-up fighting. But for those who maybe didn't read those stories, etc., tell us a little bit about who's been helping you get ready with American Top Team on your striking skills down in Florida.
Well, there's been a few people. The main coach at American Top Team is Howard Davis Jr., who's an Olympian, a gold medalist in the Olympics in Montreal. And, I mean, he's made huge improvements in my boxing, you know, just from his experience and from the style that he has. And there's one person also, and that's my fiance, Shelby Walker. She's a professional boxer and professional mixed martial arts as well. And she's been a really great help in analyzing my fights and giving me pointers on you know, how to utilize angles more and just polishing up my technique, really. So I'd say those are the two main people. And with the recent addition of a Muay Thai coach to American Top Team named Mohamed Wally from Belgium, who's fought a lot in Holland, so he's got that Dutch Muay Thai style that you see a lot in K1 Max, for example. I mean, you know, everything's just gotten really, really complete in my stand-up game.
So, Dennis, after a fight like that, when it's, you know, so successful, so immediately, obviously you're happy with that. But do you have a sense of fulfillment in the sense of this is the amount of work that you put in, and do you get a sense of feedback like you would over a fight that went three or four or five rounds, where you really get that payoff, and you get that sense that, you know, I really worked and gutted it out? Is there sort of emptiness after a fight like that? Obviously, you're happy with the victory, but.
You know what, that's a great question, because am I happy with the victory? Yes. Do I get fulfillment? Absolutely not, because I train so damn hard for these fights, you know, so when I win them so fast, you know, it's like, well, what was the point? I didn't even need to, well, I mean, I don't want to say I didn't even need to train, but, you know, you almost think to yourself, well, I could have not trained for it, but maybe it wouldn't have happened so fast if I hadn't trained for it. You never know. But to answer your question, no, I didn't have a sense of fulfillment, and that's how I felt after the fight. I was happy with the result, though, you know, that I won. It's kind of difficult to explain. You know, you're happy with the fight, but you're not at the same time.
But you look
at least I wasn't injured and I can move on to the next round. That's what I kept remembering, you know.
Well, yeah, exactly. And you mentioned that. I mean, let's look ahead to the second round. As far as I know, have any of none of the matchups have been announced yet by Pride. Is that right?
No, none.
No. So when we're looking ahead to the second round, I mean, obviously there's some guys out there that, you know, world-class talent. Who would you say, you know, obviously other than yourself, is the guy that you're most expecting to advance to the finals?
I would say probably Dan Henderson or Misaki.
Okay.
You know, who I would like to fight out of those two, I'd say either one. But they're the two, the ones that I would like to fight most out of the entire group, out of the entire seven that are left besides myself. Misaki, because, I don't know, because, you know, I like his style, you know, his real game, and he's got a real, he keeps a cool head in the ring, and he's beating some tough guys. And Dan Henderson, well, I mean, quite simply, because he's a champion. And he's, I mean, of course, you got to be good to be the champion. So, you know, I think that there's no other than winning the tournament itself, there's no higher honor in it than fighting the champion.
It's interesting to me, Dennis, as well, and maybe if you give me your impression of this, but because you fought outside of, you always fought outside of North America, really, in smaller, in bigger shows in Japan, but only small shows in North America, that now your name amongst other fighters in the Grand Prix is always being mentioned in the top two or three opponents. Does that, you feel that you finally earned the respect that you deserve when you're mentioned, you know, by your competitors as one of the top guys in the tournament?
Yeah, it definitely feels good to you know, to be spoken of and thought of in that sense. But you know, it was nice to be unknown and to kind of be flying under the radar, as people said, and to come in there and, you know, and catch guys, you know, on an off night because they thought that they were going to get an easy fight, you know. But, you know, whatever. You just got to remember that at this level, everybody's going to be watching your fights and studying you, you know, so you got to come in with something new every time.
Now, I mean, talking about people mentioning you is one of the favorites, and then you get the CEO of Pride, Sakakibara, mentioning you as one of the favorites. What was that like for you when you found out that he had said that?
Oh, you know, that was an honor. I mean, you got to remember, I'm a relative new face to Pride.
Right.
You know, I've only been there since last year, and before that, I'm a professional fighter in MMA, but I'm also a huge MMA fan. So before I actually fought the Pride, I watched every Pride, and you know, I was. Before Bushido was around, I was watching Pride FC. I've been watching it since day one. And, you know, to actually be mentioned in a sentence by the president of Pride was huge. You know, it was incredible because, I, you know, just 1 year ago, I was sitting in my living room watching videotapes and wishing that I was one day going to make it. You know, then all of a sudden, he's mentioning me as being one of the favorites in the tournament. So it was surreal. I couldn't believe it at first.
Yeah, of course.
It's interesting. Do you find it curious the way the Pride selects their fights? Oftentimes, especially in North America, you know who you're fighting, and you can sort of plan months and months in advance. And it seems like Pride, at least to the public, is sometimes last minute with their fights. And as well, they market you in a very interesting way. Some, if you've ever seen Japanese broadcasts of the Pride shows, they market you as a Korean, which is very interesting. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, of course. Well, I think first of all, they have different marketing strategies, or maybe just a different approach to marketing. I think because maybe the culture is a little bit different in Asia. So I don't exactly know how it is, but I'm guessing why, you know, people are finding their marketing practice is a little bit different than what you see in North America. Now, as far as fighting as a Korean, and, you know, I fought in Korea for the first time about 3 or 4 years ago, and I was embraced by the country, you know, in the first year that I fought there. You know, I got a chance to see my father, whom I hadn't seen in a long time, and retouch with family that I've been out of touch with for a number of years. And I was asked to go represent Korea, you know, in Pride, because there were no Korean fighters in Pride at that time. And, you know, I accepted it just as a show of thanks to the country for having treated me so well and to make my father and family pride in Korea.
Now, obviously,
that's wonderful. And now you seem to be the only game in town in Korea. Now that they've left
exited the World Cup early in such a tragic way.
Well, really? Well, you know what? I haven't even been paying attention to the World Cup.
Now, you mentioned, you know, your background, and obviously us Canadians, we know you from the Vancouver area.
Yep.
And spending your earlier part in your career. And, you know, for some people, this has all been well documented, but for some of our American listeners out there who maybe don't know, tell us a little bit about your background and your first initial foray into mixed martial arts here in Vancouver with Marcus Suarez.
Sure. Well, I grew up in Vancouver since I was 11 years old, and I started all throughout high school. I wrestled and did a little bit of karate here and there. When I was 18, I started watching the UFC, you know, kind of like everybody else, mm-hmm. watching Royce Gracie and Pat Smith and Ken Shamrock, and I thought it was the greatest thing in the world. You know, I didn't really have any real aspirations of becoming a fighter right then, but, you know, I at least wanted to watch it and become a huge fan and you know, all that stuff. And I started training in Hapkido, which is a Korean martial art, and, you know, that particular Hapkido club practiced a lot of grappling. So, you know, I still did a lot of grappling, and I thought that at that time I was ready to become an ultimate fighter. You know, I thought I was practicing the complete martial art, and I could get in there. And I think I was 18 years old at that time. I just turned 18, and I was an orange belt in Hapkido. I felt like my kicks were pretty hard, and my grappling was on par with everybody in there. So I tried to fight in, it was like a modified MMA event, you know, but you had to wear a gi, and you could do palm strikes standing up and submissions on the ground. And I got submitted pretty quick, I remember. And, you know, it was an awakening, to say the least. And so I decided that I had to change my methods a little bit and train more for competition than for street self-defense. And I heard of Marcus Suarez moving to town. And, you know, I went and tried out, and I got my ass kicked the first few months.
Yeah.
And I was pretty discouraged at first because I was really just getting beaten up by everybody, but I stuck to it anyways. And, you know, eventually everything, I was still working full-time at the time. And eventually I just kept training and training more and winning little competitions here and there, and I had my first MMA fights. And I started working a little bit less, you know, instead of working like a day job in the office, I was bouncing at nightclubs so I can train a little bit more. And, you know, as I started to take more fights and make a little bit more money, I started to teach jiu-jitsu instead of working, and here I am. You know, I made the move to American Top Team for better training opportunities, and now I'm fighting in Japan.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about American Top Team, because now the name instead of for the hardcore fans, is becoming known in the sort of mainstream MMA media. And then last night we saw your teammate Wilson Gavilla fight and look very good in the early goings against Keith Jardine.
Yes.
He looked like he was going to make that a very short fight. So tell us what's a little bit of the history of the team, and talk a little bit about your teammates who are seeing more and more, like Jeff Munson and yourself and people like Gavilla.
Yeah, well, the team is a fairly new team. It's only been around for, I believe, around maybe 3 or 4 years. I was originally started by Conan Silveira, his brother Marcelo Silveira, and Ricardo Liborio. And, I mean, it's evolved from, you know, a jiu-jitsu-based team to now a complete mixed martial arts team. You know, I mean, we've got, you know, like you mentioned earlier, we've got coaches and everything, and we've got athletes such as myself, Jeff Munson, Wilson Gouveia, Dean Thomas, you know, a lot of fighters fighting in UFC. We've got Jay-Z now fighting in K-1 Heroes. So it's evolved into really like a dominant force in the world of the mixed martial arts, and I think it's got the potential to be the number one team in the world, you know, on the same level as Shoot Block, Brazilian Top Team, and all those other ones.
Now, with the news, and it's still nothing has been confirmed, and obviously with the recent television problems that Pride has run into, and they have to resolve those. But they have talked about having a show here in North America, and we've talked about this before as well. But tell us a little bit about your hopes when we discussed this before, and for those who didn't read those interviews, about having a Pride show in North America where you can, you know, fight in front of, you know, your American Canadian fans.
Oh, I love that. I mean, I haven't fought in North America. I fought in North America last year in December in a local show here in Florida called AFC.
Yeah.
But before that, I hadn't fought in the U.S. or just North America for, you know, a few years, because most of it had been been to, you know, to UFCs in Vegas and seen the fan response that the fighters get, and, you know, it'd be great to be part of that.
Are you starting to get to that level, Dennis, where if you are at a North American event, do some of the kind of hardcore MMA fans ever recognize you and come up and they've seen you fight in Pride?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's like that at most events that I go to, you know. And I love it, you know. It's a lot of fun. I get to meet a lot of different people, and all the fans that come up to you are so supportive and respectful of what you do, you know. So it gives you a lot of motivation to keep training and to keep on training along.
So I have to ask you a question about one of the more colorful characters on your team, and that's Jeff Monson, who's not only a great MMA fighter but also sort of Noam Chomsky-esque anarchist. Political figure, an espouser of ideals that certainly aren't the sort of mainstream American political ideals. What's it like training and working with him? And does he make you guys watch films and educate you in anarchist philosophy?
No, Jeff's a great guy. I mean, he's got a great sense of humor. We goof around with him. You know, everybody on the team is just a bunch of kids. You know, and we mess around a lot. And Jeff is definitely part of that. And, you know, everybody, you know, every different day we're picking on someone else. Sometimes it's Jeff, sometimes it's on me, sometimes it's on whoever, you know. No, Jeff's a good sport, and he's an incredible training partner because he's just got a real hard style to deal with. You know, I train with him on a daily basis when he's down here, and he's definitely one of the best guys that I've got to go against with in grappling and wrestling, for sure. But as far as, you know, things like his political views and things like that, it doesn't really come into play when we're in the gym, you know, because I think that's something that he believes in, and, you know, it's who he is. But
it's pretty refreshing, put it that way. It's pretty refreshing.
It is. It's different, you know. It is refreshing to see someone who's not afraid to think against the grain, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, we've talked about the American Top Team, and we talked about you going to and training with Marcus, and the fact is too is some people might not know that Marcus still, he travels with you and he corners pretty much all your fights still, correct?
Yes, that's right. Marcus has been to almost every single one of my fights, and I still bring him along to my Pride fights. I think him and I have a real, real strong connection in and outside of the ring. You know, of course in the ring, he knows me so well as a fighter. He knows what I can and can't do, and how to react to certain things. And he knows how to talk to me. And, you know, he always says that I'm like a robot in the ring, and he's got the remote control inside the ring, and he's controlling me. Because when he's yelling instructions, I'm doing everything he says, you know. But outside the ring, we've got a real close relationship as well. And I just like having him there. You know, makes me feel comfortable, and I know that he knows exactly, you know, how to push me inside the when I'm in there.
Right.
Does any of that, a lot of the Brazilian teams in the show, you saw this especially with the passing of Carlson Gracie, show incredible respect to their teachers, and they become, in a sense, more than training partners, but they're almost familial relationships. Do you experience that as well in Top Team and with your own coach, Marco Suarez?
Absolutely. I think it also goes back to the tradition of martial arts, you know, coming from Asia and being respectful to your elders, your teachers, and you know, family members and whatnot. And I think it's something that a lot of people have lost touch with. You know, it's a real old world tradition, and I think it's really important. You know, loyalty and family are, you know, it's something that really makes life a lot more worth it than what it really is, than going on trucking along alone. You know, and you know, you see a lot of people jumping around from gym to gym and club to club, you know, and, you know, me going on down to American Top Team, I still stayed within the Carson Gracie and the Jiu-Jitsu family, you know, and it's not like I ever left or, you know, and left Marcus. You know, everything was up front with him and everything, and he was very supportive, and he understood, and I still talk to him on a daily basis, you know, and I always will be, you know, very close to him.
All right, Dennis, well, we should let you get out of here. Thank you very much for coming on, and again, first show ever, and we really appreciate it.
Best of luck, Dennis.
And yeah, best of luck in the future, and I'm sure we'll be in touch, man. Thanks again.
No problem, guys. My pleasure.
Okay, here we are back on this first edition of NHB News on Full Contact Fighter Radio Network. And, well, Brendan, man, it was a good show. Some interesting comments from both Dennis Kang and Kenny Florian.
Yeah, it was a wonderful first show. It was exciting to have those guys aboard and some very insightful commentary.
Yeah, absolutely. Dennis wanted us to mention, he forgot to mention on air, that he has a seminar coming up in British Columbia. He's got one on July 8th at Canada's Best Karate in Victoria, BC, on Vancouver Island. And also he's going to have one here in Vancouver at Universal Mixed Martial Arts on Granville Street on Sunday the 9th. And those seminars are going to be 2 to 2.5 hours long. So Dennis is going to be coming back to Canada from Florida to do those. And one other thing I wanted to mention, we've also got a website up for the show. It's called, or sorry, no website. The website's fcfighter.com. But the email address is what I mentioned, is radio@fcfighter.com. So if you've got comments, suggestions, questions for either Brendan or myself, you can contact us at radio@fcfighter.com. And yeah, Brendan, looks like this week, our next show, we'll be talking about some of the stuff that happened on Wednesday night.
Sounds like a plan, Kelsey. Look forward to it.
Yeah.
Have a nice week yourself.
Yes, all the best, and take care. And oh yeah, TKO as well, TKO 26. TKO 26 is this Saturday, I believe, and I also wanted to mention that too. So got some guys fighting there. Chris Horodecki, the Team Tompkins up-and-comer fighter who's really turning some heads around North America. He's fighting Samuel Gillette. I hope I'm pronouncing his last name correctly. So that'll be an interesting matchup from TKO 26 as well. So there's some other great fights on that card too that we'll probably be talking about next
week. Always a very good show.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, Brendan, I'll let you get out of here, man. And thanks again for coming on. And thanks to everyone out there for listening to this first haphazard attempt at a podcast.
See you, Kelsey.
Okay, see ya.